Chapter 28. The Last Fight. The shepherd dog straightened up, gasping for breath and trembling all over. He sat on a wooden floorboard and looked around. Immediately he realized where he was, because he knew this place. This was the center of the mind of his creator, the architect. He was on Alpha Vol and had accomplished his mission, although no one believed that would be possible. Of this small wooden house, which consisted of only one room, he had already written two times in the Vulpes Lupus Canis. At its beginning the young Banato dreamed of it, in their midst the wolf Amarok also. But now it was he himself who woke up here, not knowing why he had come here. Chenra remembered that he had just wrestled with Yanapu, who had cut him with Pharaoh's dagger. As the dog thought about it, the pain of that deep wound ran through him again and he groaned with his eyes squeezed shut and his jaw clenched. "Damn it!" he shouted, promptly grabbing the left side of his body and struggling to get up. Immediately he felt dizzy and stumbled, but managed to support himself on the top of a wooden table that stood in the room. He looked at the blood-red hand and noticed that it left a wet, red imprint on the surface. The Alsatian was coughing and panting. His whole body was tingling and the pulse could be felt everywhere. Again, he clutched his wound as drops of blood fell from it to the floor. Exhausted, he staggered to the door, which let daylight in through a small window. Even these few steps were very exhausting for him, which is why he leaned powerlessly with the side of his body against the door and paused. Heavy breathing followed, with the male looking around the room. Pictures of the Gajan creator hung on the walls. Some of them merely showed a serious face, some depicted him in everyday situations. He was probably often busy smoking, drinking beer, or typing on a computer. These pictures, it seemed to Gajes, said absolutely nothing about the person in them. Anyone could have been depicted in them. There were behaviors to be recognized, as every other Gajan used them just as well. If this small room was supposed to be the central point of everything, of this story, why wasn't there more to be found here than a sparsely occupied bed, a wooden table including chairs, a few pictures? Was that all this person had to offer? As he let his eyes drift past an open, empty cupboard, the shepherd fixed his thoughts on the bloodstain he had left on the dining room table. "This is it," he whispered to himself. "I've been here before." He recalled that the situations in which he had Banato and Amarok come here included a mysterious bloodstain on the table, drops of blood on the floor, and a bloodstained door. When it suddenly dawned on him what this meant, he stopped leaning against the door and watched the viscous liquid running down it with wide eyes. "So you'll be here soon, too," he thought to himself, and now he understood, what he had written down many years ago was yet to happen. Banato and Amarok would enter this room later, long after him. He would confuse his wolf with what he would say in the future and lead him straight to a past that, from his own perspective, could not have happened yet. All this was very paradoxical and self-revealing at the same time. Everything had not happened yet. Not even Banato, the original Aramaran, had been here yet. Could this mean that he, the Kisar, had managed to change time so that his Amarok and also Joliyad would never be born? Again the dog groaned and pressed his hand on the cut. Even though he was very fearless and strong, he felt the fear of the end growing inside him. No one would be able to help him here. Surely it would only be a matter of time before he bled to death. "Oh, what the heck," he said to himself. "I've accomplished what I wanted, I think. Well, great creator. When man invented the saw, he immediately began sawing at his own branch. And you are the same, when you let me walk alone, you sealed the end of your world." He fell silent, happened to glance in the direction of a picture in which his father was smiling for once, and walked toward it. There he saw him standing next to a mannequin in canine anthropomorphic form. On closer inspection, the sovereign realized that this mannequin looked like himself. It was a likeness, though not very realistically built. However, a resemblance was unmistakable, as well as the pride of the man who joyfully put his arm around it and looked satisfied. The male dog squinted his eyes thoughtfully, staring at the photo and contradicting himself, "Didn't you?" As he turned around in pain, looking at the door, he thought about the fact that his attempt to change the past might have failed. After all, his blood was now in the very places where his protagonists would find it sometime in the future, according to the Vulpes Lupus Canis. The fact that he had traveled to the past, been injured, and lost the fight against Yanapu could also have caused the future, which until earlier had been his own past, to occur first. No, The male spoke loudly to himself, "It can't be. It is not possible." He quickly opened the door so he could see if it would look like he suspected it would outside. He was to be proved right. It was a cold, calm winter day and the trees were shrouded in snow. It was snowing heavily and the panting breath of the dog was visible. The wind carried each puff slowly towards the sky like a small cloud, making a soft rustling sound. Chenra spotted a dark silhouette among the closely falling snowflakes that seemed to be coming toward him, asked aloud, "Who's there?" No answer. "I'm talking to you. Who are you and what do you want here?" But then it went through the male like a flash, when the figure stood in front of him from one moment to the next and spoke softly, "Go back inside. It's cold outside." This phrase was very familiar to him, because he had heard it himself two times within the story of his friends, but without knowing from whom it came. When he saw a face that belonged to a body wrapped in a linen robe, he was startled. "The face belonged to me."
"You?"
he spoke. "How?" I smiled, "So we meet again, my dog." Looking at the small puddle of blood next to the anthro's foot, I added, "And as I note, you did what needed to be done. So everything is as it should be." "Oh yes, I did."
"Your game is over, Christian."
"Your game with us, it ends here and now." The male hissed angrily.
"You think?"
I asked deprecatingly, meaning that he was in no shape at all to even swat a fly. Sure, that was arrogant, but I knew how to irritate the Kisar. He bared his teeth and let go of his injury so that he could clench both fists. Despite his bruises, this dog, still, made a very handsome, masculine and strong figure, which secretly impressed me. Despite his aggression, or precisely because of it, he was incredibly sexy. At least that was my point of view.
"Nothing," I began, "is really over. You could not accomplish what you wanted to do. You may have been in the past, prevented the ancestors from entering Alpha Vol directly. But have you ever considered that even all that was just part of what should have happened anyway? Part of the Vulpes Lupus Canis, so to speak?"
"What are you talking about? I may not have defeated Yennepa. But that has nothing to do with my mission in any way. It's done. Alpha Vol will never be inhabited. Just the fact that I'm here is a change in time." I shook my head. "What do you think has been transferred in the energy beam? Haven't you noticed that all the sperm, all the fluids have come here, along with you? They are spread on the wooden floor, sticking to you and your clothes. Do you understand?" Gajaz did not believe me, because he could not. He had been on the planet of the people, had changed the timeline permanently. Juliad and Amarok would now never be born and thus never die. Would they? On the other hand, he reflected, he was now in the place where Banato's dream would turn to evil and lead to eternal hatred between Aramarans and Samoydans. If he, Chenra, the seat of the deities, had left his blood here, the events of the future could occur as well. Consequently, nothing he had done would have affected history. "Do you remember your meeting with the minister of the child Pharaoh Ptolemy? He told you that your protector was made of the same material as Tutankhaten's dagger. Of course, you wondered how the breastplate could ever have ended up on Alpha Vol with your leader, when it was created on Gaja. Now you have your answer, you yourself brought it here in the first place. Just as you brought the blood to the little wooden house." He turned away from me, lowered his head and was stunned.
"It can't be," he exclaimed.
I folded my arms and told him, "You could never have changed anything anyway. History is written. Time repairs itself when you try to change it by force. You couldn't make a difference. Don't you remember how you had already told Amarok that in his dream while he was unconscious?" The anthro now became thoughtful, turned back to me, and then said quietly, "Without what he mistakenly told Banato, none of this would have happened, yes." I agreed, "Yes, you tried to teach your wolf that everything had to happen the way it did. And now you're standing here, in the same place, and you don't understand it either." The Alsatian came a step closer, so that our bodies almost touched each other. Once again, I was struck by the stature of this fighter. I had made him, imagined him, and he was the only thing in my life close enough to perfection to be loved by me. I asked him, "Do you actually know what the saying 'go back inside? It's cold outside' means?" He groaned, pressed his hand on the wound and did not answer, to which I resolved, "It means that it is dangerous to look beyond the horizon, to leave his environment, his protection.
It was you who saved me from my end as an infant, felt that coldness yourself that people can cause. Do you remember? Our worlds are dangerous, yours and mine. Now that you are standing here before me, you will have understood that you were never capable of changing any of this, were you? You once said that you had released me from the act of Vulpes Lupus Canis. I was free in my actions. How can all this have had no effect? I sighed. I told you that you were free so that we would never meet again and I could finish my story. You were never freed. The story went on, even if you didn't know it. Even your journey to Tamari was part of what will be in the Vulpes Lupus Canis today and in the future. You built it yourself with your actions, but just in a fixed trickle of time. No. Shouted the sheepdog, preparing to use his fist against me. However, as the one who could always visualize every action, I knew when he would strike. So I took a quick step to the side so that Chenra missed me, stumbled and went down. Looking down on him, I asked not to even try, said he was too weak. Don't do that, my dog. This won't end the way you think. He laughed with hoarse exasperation. Yes, that must be great, to arrogantly have omnipotence. It must turn you on to see me suffer. Just like killing and torturing your other children, isn't it? I wish I'd let you die in that fire instead of helping you. Or much sooner. Brave and bearing as he was, the Alsatian stood up again and growled. Chenra, I explained, you united with my spirit out of compassion when I was left in that baby carriage on the balcony. In doing so, you sealed both of our fates. You and I, we belong together. Always I have said that I looked into my own soul for a very long time and that's why I went mad. You don't say, the male grumbled, coughing up some blood. If I hadn't noticed, you'd have a mental disorder. I shook my head, you don't understand. I don't mean the normal crazy. I always meant that I had gone crazy for you. You saved me from that burning apartment years ago. At that time you were just a feeling, a ghost without a shell. But when I caught sight of you, saw your face as you stood in my room, I fell in love with you. I once wrote the book for someone else. But I simply forgot about him at that moment. You are really sick, human. Hissed the sovereign. He took another swing, whereupon I shook my head and raised my hand. Chenra, don't. You have read the entire work. So you also know that I love you, sincerely, honestly, and until the end of time. I earned a questioning look from him and blew a whistle, after which soft footsteps sounded, which became louder and louder. What is this? Asked Gajaz. But when he tried to turn to the supposed source of the noise, he received a blow to the head. Again he went down, but briskly picked himself up, howling as blood was squeezed out of his wound. He realized that a male fox was standing in front of him and didn't want to do him any good. Immediately, he lunged and tried to hit his counterpart, who managed to squirm out of it and let the blows come to nothing. Then they faced each other, the fox looked aggressive and dogged, Chenra overwhelmed and breathing fast. What are you doing? Asked the Alsatian, turning around, looking for me. Who was this fox? Was he an Aramaran? How could that be possible? Did they not even exist yet? What did he want from him? Hey, Chenra spoke up, whoever you are, or whatever you want. I may be hurt, but you're still going to get a beating. The fox, however, remained unimpressed by this, did not answer and did not make a face. What now? Spoke Gajaz crossly. Are you going to stand there like that forever? I think I'd rather bleed out here until you're finally ready. If you're going to punch me in the face, you'd better hurry up. When he had pronounced this sentence, the stranger walked towards him again. Surely now it would come to a fight, and so the dog wished for a weapon, something with which he could have defended himself. Immediately, the two engaged in a fistfight, punching each other in the face and on the bursting lips. When the fox got hold of the dog's neck, he squeezed with all his might. However, Chenra managed to fight back and loosen the opponent's hands. A swift kick to the stomach followed, sending him flying a few steps and falling to the snow-white ground. The fox could not yet stand up, when the Alsatian rushed at him, threw himself on his upper body and embraced the fox's upper and lower jaws with one of his hands each. Gasping, the would-be Aramaran's eyes snapped open, tensely resisting what Chenra was about to do by moving his upper body. Red fangs were embraced by choppy, rapid breathing, braced against the strength of a fighter, trembling with effort. The canine hands, however, were used to hard work, pain and cold. So his adversary had no chance to prevail against them. The fox emitted a low squeal, accompanied by tear-filled eyes of a plea for mercy, as the dog opened its jaws wider and wider, tearing it open with all its might. Then time seemed to freeze for a moment. Chunra looked into the face of the fox, who looked at him as if to say, "No, please don't." But in all his aggression, he did not give in, overhearing the loud crack of the jaw, continuing to press until it was torn open into a semicircle, the fox's furry cheek skin torn bloody, and the resistance weakened. One last jerk, followed by a final yelp, and the fox was dead, its head covered in blood and he beaten. Exhausted, the Kisar let himself roll off the lifeless torso of his adversary so that he lay on his back in the snow. He had to rest a bit now, breathing fast and heavily. Everything hurt him and, after the adrenaline had worn off, he held his wound again, which wouldn't stop bleeding. After a while he sat up again and looked at the lifeless body, which had stretched out its arms. Then he noticed that the right hand of the anthro was only half closed, as if it was holding a weapon where there was none. This detail startled him, because he suddenly noticed the striking resemblance of the hybrid to the statue in the marketplace in Bolmer. "What the?" he asked, calling my name over and over. He received no answer, while Snowflake sat soulfully on his shoulders. The dog did not understand what sense it should make that the statue of Bolmer, which had brought him to Egypt, could suddenly be alive and fight him. So he pondered and tried to solve an almost senseless puzzle in his head, but there was no solution. "Now," my voice rang out again, "you have destroyed my last ideal. My idol is history, just as you will be history, Chenra." My face appeared before him again, and the dog rose up in a rage. "You! Just you wait!" he growled and ran toward me. But I calmly reached out my hand and held it out to him like a wall of flesh. His movements froze abruptly, a few centimeters in front of it. In the middle of a slight jump, he could not move his limbs any further, but it was possible for him to speak. "Don't do that. I'll destroy you, Gajan. It will end." Gajaz understood that I could do exactly what he had done with the actors in Volpe's Lupus Canis in the past. I, too, was able to freeze time, to move everywhere whenever and however I wanted. I was the architect, the doer, the master of time, his time. Wherever I needed a focus, I set it. But then something happened that I had not expected. Aware of his power as part of my ego, this dog had the same abilities. And since he now knew that I had never really released him from the story, he also used these abilities. He shouted, "Continue!" and let the passage of time begin again with all its movements. Perplexed, I opened my eyes wide and understood that he was my equal. Quickly I dissolved my figure in air, so that the male ran into the void and staggered. "Damn you!" he shouted. "Show yourself, you coward. Come on. Let's finish it. Man against dog. I'll kill you." But I remained hidden, and only my voice I let him hear, which said, "No, you are far from finished, my dog. Fulfill your destiny and take care of the beginning." When I finished this sentence, my protagonist noticed that some soldiers in Samoyedan uniforms were approaching him from different directions. They were walking slowly, not running, because they were in a numerical advantage and formed a tightening circle, so that the surprised sheepdog could not have escaped. "You really want to have me killed?" he shouted, turning to the sky. "Don't you want to do it yourself? Is your human body too weak against me? Don't you have the guts? Do it yourself." But even now I did not answer his speech, let the wolfish warriors come closer and closer and looked unseen down on the scenery. Lulling myself in my almighty security, I knew, Gajaz was the last part to be added to my soul for its salvation. I had already killed Joliad Kakodaz and Amarok, when they had fulfilled their due for the story of my life. They, too, would have resisted. Only, unlike this impressive shepherd dog, they did not have the strength to do so. Thus, Joliad's life ended abruptly and unexpectedly, as this meant that faith can be shaken or destroyed by sudden loss at any time. Amarok's life ended agonizingly, for this meant that love, which is not eternal, could end with long suffering. Chenra Gajaz, as my symbol for hope, was to end just as hope always did in my life, with disappointment at having wasted it senselessly on something that was in vain anyway. Hope, however, was the proverbial last to die. It was the strongest, most irrevocable thing. Well, my dog whispered, since you wouldn't have it any other way. Just don't think I'm giving up. A few steps away from him, the Samoyedan stopped. They all carried swords, but no shields. Now Chenra shouted, I will fight proudly. Even in this hopelessness you do not break me, Christian. He threw his arm skyward and, surprised, I found that he was using his skills to make the sword with the engraving Per Aspera ad Astra appear in his hand. Immediately I regretted having told him what he had not known before. I had unintentionally enabled him to write a line or two, in addition to my own, in the Vulpes Lupus Canis, which he now did. The male got ready for the fight, bent his knees and counted the wolves. His injury was bleeding less, but his chaps were also taken from the previous fight and made him spit blood into the snow with a gesture of contempt. 7, he said quietly to himself. Then he lowered his arm slightly and grinned grimly as he asked sardonically, how about a little more fire? He took a deep breath and let flames arise around the Aramaran blade. As they blazed up, I sensed that this male was going to fight fiercely, not knowing that his defensiveness, great as it was only going to make it worse for him. The Alsatian let out a battle cry and ran towards one of the enemies. The latter was so surprised by the blazing flames that he could not counterattack and was quickly pierced by the enemy's blade. The fur caught fire and he went down, after which the remaining adversaries closed the circle tighter, waving their blades wildly and snarling. 6! Shouted the Kisar. This made the opponents even angrier and unleashed the aggression I was feeling here. They all shouted in their language in confusion, trying to reach the shepherd, but he was able, despite the serious injury, to always avoid them, slit their throats, pierce their bodies and give them punches and kicks. 5. 4. 3. The sovereign counted shouting loudly. Suddenly he got a cut on his chest, despite the fact that he was wearing the protector, but it was not very deep. Reflexively, he grabbed his body, staggered back a step and looked into the angry faces of the last three remaining wolves. The laws he knew from Egypt did not seem to apply here, because he could apparently still be injured. Come here. He shouted, and those addressed followed. Quickly they stretched their blades towards him, all of them jumped in his direction. But they shot past the fast-moving dog, which was able to grasp the arm of an adversary and quickly twisted it around its own axis so far that it tore out and the wolfish blood splattered. Loud yelps rang out, after which Chenra unlocked his jaw and bit the attacker in the head. Then he used his armed, outstretched arm and stabbed the gurgling screaming wolf with his own blade. At the same time, another soldier came at him, but was stopped hard because the dog lifted the burning sword and shoved it into his larynx. The dog did not look in his direction, but landed a lucky shot. After this, he let go of the soldier whose head he had bitten and, gasping for air, forgot that there must still be a soldier alive. The latter now gathered his strength, shouted, and quickly lashed out with his weapon. He hit the other male at the root of his tail before he could turn to him. A long, shrill scream rang out from the dog's throat, making the air tremble. For a brief moment, a lot of blood spurted in a high arc from the stump that stuck out of the Kisar's uniform instead of the rod, instantly dyeing it red. More small splashes escaped with each beat of his heart and the body went numb with pain. A moment later, the Alsatian turned around, appeared dazed, and took one last swing. That he did not faint on the spot stunned the Samoyedan, who looked startled and raised his sword again. Chenra countered, however, and held his flaming weapon out to him. Clashing, the metals crossed, and the males pressed with all their might against each other's strength. They glared viciously into each other's eyes, panting, growling again and again as clouds of their breathing melted slowly falling snowflakes between their bloody fangs. They groaned, moaned, and I had to admit to myself that although I had expected this dog to fight back aggressively, there was no way I could have guessed how hard he was to kill. For what felt like an eternity, the wolf and the dog tried to break the strength of the other, while I clenched my fists and longed for an end. He had to die, to let go. He understood, after all, that he was a part of me and that it had to be. Had he still not understood that he could not bring Joliad and Amarok back to life? I called out to him, give it up, Chenra. Please, let it happen. Stop the violence. When it ends, I promise you, I will bring you into my world. You will live, in a different way. Gasping, he brought out a horseshoe lie, visibly weakened but not ready to give up. Now tears formed in my eyes as I affirmed, no, it's the truth. I love you. I understood, he couldn't help but not give up. His resistance, his doggedness, his courage and his pride, all these were parts of him. Of me. When I thought about it, I became very sad. I was a father who was about to kill his last son, even though I didn't hate him. What I saw from a safe distance would have taken only a few more seconds and I would have become weak, given up everything and let him survive. I would have ended my story and every lesson in it, every work on it and my self-discovery with one blow. Everything would have been meaningless, my world would have become meaningless. I would have lost and would have seen no more reason in my life. And that only out of deep, honest love for a dog, an anthro, who only existed in my head. But just as I was about to intervene, it happened. Chenro was able to pull the glowing sword blade through his opponent's face with his last strength, so that the wolf's head caught fire under the screams of its owner and the soldier ran around whimpering. After a few steps, he fell into the snow and became completely still. Immediately, bitter-smelling smoke formed, and the flaming gray fur crackled. Close to fainting, Gay-Jay suddenly felt a deep cut in the back of his knee. A soldier, who the dog thought had hit him, managed to inflict another injury with his last strength before he finally breathed his last. Once again, the Alsatian groaned and sank to the ground, just a step away from his severed tail. He had suffered too many injuries. Lost too much blood. Too much to bear. Stop breathing, my dog. The Kisar lay backwards in the snow, eyes wide and bleary and muzzle wide open. Arms and legs he had stretched away from him as his resistance to the inevitable died. The bloodied, canine muzzle stretched deep red, sharp teeth toward the bone chilling cold. The soft tail had frozen into a solid body and lay in the red powdery snow. All the blood that had poured under his body, covering his armor and the lost sword, had frozen into ice and snowflakes found their place on it without thawing. Even on his eyeballs, which shone like amber glass marbles, they remained for a moment before a small breeze could carry them away. Everything was cold, stiff and dead. He was dead, destroyed by his own creator, the architect of Alpha Vol, his world. I had destroyed him. His spirit left the lifeless flesh and looked down on his shell one last time. No. It can't be over. He exclaimed, and, pulled by some invisible force, moved farther and farther away from the scene. His master and mentor, I, the Gajan, had disappeared, leaving the world icy and devastated. Sitting on my bed and crying, I blew my nose into a handkerchief. Oh, my Chenra, I whimpered softly. I'm so sorry. I promise you that we will be together. The surroundings turned a deep black and a blink of an eye later the Kisar awoke, lying in front of a stone staircase. He slowly raised his head and felt that he had carried all his wounds and pain with him here. Cramping and panting, he held the bleeding left side of his stomach and groaned as he dragged himself up the first step of the stairs. Teeth clenched, he looked upward as blood oozed from his muzzle and dripped onto the stairs. The second step, accompanied by a sigh, was climbed. Everything hurt him, every bone, but especially his big wounds that would not stop bleeding. The dog recognized far above the end of the stairs, a faint light that penetrated through a crack of an open door and illuminated the last of all the steps. He had to make it, tread this last path. What awaited him up there, what he was supposed to do here, Chenra did not know. But instinctively he felt that it was right to gather all his strength and climb up. Then it became clear to him, this was the access to the Duat, the last phase before the ascent or descent of his soul. He understood that he was dead and therefore everything was over. Now the time would end for him, because he had lost the last fight for his world against its own maker. The Kisar, the sovereign, strong as a rock, defeated by a naked, weak, furless human who had neither claws nor fangs. What weapon was it really that had struck down the shepherd? Now he was the loser and had not been able to keep his promise to his friends. He had achieved nothing, because this person, the architect, was more powerful than him. Aramaria, Samojija, Alsatianaya. Great names of a world that is now doomed to die because I was too weak. I'm so sorry, Amarok and Joliad, he spoke softly to himself, whimpering as he pushed his battered body up some steps now on all fours, tears mingling with the red color on his furry face. I failed. I wish I could have helped you. I wish all this had never happened and I had never written Vulpes Lupus Canis. This damn book? He cried, pounding his fist on the stone and becoming deeply sad as his courage began to fail him. I can't, he cried, and his body slumped, leaving him motionless on the stairs to the duat. A while passed before he heard a voice he had heard before. He spoke to him from the light at the end of the path, "Come on, dog. Get up and walk the last path. Be strong and move forward, one last time." He blinked and inhaled abruptly, deep and fast, accompanied by the fact that his bright eyes snapped open and his pupils constricted. From one moment to the next, some strength returned to him and he snorted. "Come, Kesar. Come to me." The deep voice called echoingly and the male dog gathered all his strength to stand up, pained and proud, one last time, lifted his head and looked up at the light. The silhouette of a dark anthro revealed itself and the light became brighter, while the Alsatian, strained and dogged, full of pain and unwavering, left step after step of the stairs behind him. He could do it, he could not give up. "I owe this to you and my world," he thought to himself, pressing on his stomach wound as his trembling legs slowly carried him to the last of all sections so that he stood before the creature. Exhausted, he looked with drooping eyelids into the face of the jackal Yanapu, who nodded gently, confident and proud. "Well, dog. You've arrived at the end of all time, haven't you?" the latter asked. Gajaz nodded sadly and silently. "It is time for you to pay the agreed-upon price for once saving the life of your creator." "W what?" the dog asked, his face contorted in pain. "Don't you remember? I told you that I would take your souls when the time came. For that, I left your father alive at the time. You had denied me another time to take him with me." The shepherd dog remembered. "You are right. I lost the battle against you, too. Here I am now, Yanapu. Do with me what you will. Joliad and Amarok are dead, died for nothing. This is all my fault and I will take any punishment you want." But the jackal just grinned and shook his head. "Now," he spoke, "since you are all united in you, you will accompany me to the duat. You three, Joliad, Amarok and you, are now one. A full soul of a unique personality. So what's going to happen to my world now? Its destiny is fulfilled and it is ready to be forgotten. Just as you will be forgotten. So I promised you once. So they should be forgotten. Was it the architect's goal to forget his love for his protagonists? Why had he, Chenra, saved his life? Was it all in vain?" He sighed, "Why all this? Why this story if it's going to be forgotten anyway? The mind of your creator is now tidied up and that is completed by your part, the last third. That alone was the goal of history and the goal of your three lives. You shall not be punished by me. On the contrary, this is not something sad, but the next stage of your being. It is an invitation to an experience for you." The Alsatian remembered the beginning of the Vulpes Lupus Canis, in which he, no, this Gajan, wrote. "Once I was Chenra Gajaz. But actually, it was not me. It was just the name I had once given myself. A name that the world around me never accepted. I gave it to myself out of love and passion, and it was indicative of the reverence I paid to my world. It had risen from the turmoil of a war my mind was waging with itself, a battle of three personalities. None of them was about dominance in my thoughts, however, each of them wanted to be part of the others, eternally connected, ordered and clear. Now I understand," Gajaz remarked, his lungs whistling softly with each of his short breaths. "You were a strong opponent. I should hate you for what you did to me. But I can't. I almost think that humiliation was important, too." He sighed loudly when his counterpart nodded wordlessly. Yanapu now smiled almost fatherly as he held out his midnight black hand to him and asked softly, "So would you like to come now, dog?" Kesar took his hand from the gaping wound so that a lot of blood poured out beside him. He now stood there smiling, with his knees and back slightly bent, ready for the end. He had lived a long life, seen many things. He had always been the brave, good-natured dog and had never been guilty of anything. He always defended, fought in the name of hope and tried to turn everything to the good. Even though he could have hated me, the human being, he did not. After all, I should keep my promise and take my children with me into my reality, in me and my thoughts of them. Our goal is fulfilled. "Let's go, Yanapu," he agreed and, side by side with the jackal-headed ancient Egyptian god of Duat, passed through the iron door to eternity.